queer folks who are both vulnerable folks because they're highly traumatized. Being Indigenous, it's highly traumatizing. Being queer is highly traumatizing. You combine that, that's a complex trauma that you're dealing with. And any places that we are and that we're there and we have our voices there, that's impacting decisions, whether it's on a small scale or a large. I want to get to the bigger scales. Those are difficult and more harder conversations to navigate through. But I feel like it's possible. It's absolutely 100% possible. You know, when we do this work without core funding, all these other Indigenous organizations like the AFN, Métis Nation, NWAC, they get core funding. We don't. We do this on shoestring budgets, meaning I apply for 6 budgets and out of their admin costs, that's what's paying for my wage to be there. Whereas everybody else is at this level playing field, at least at the bare minimum, they have those things met. And it's not that I want to take away from those communities because I feel like those communities well represent our Indigenous communities. But we need a representation of 2S at that table. You can't tell me it's the same thing as making decisions for queer people and we're not at the table.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me. I have to be there. I'm not saying me myself as a personal person, but I feel like there needs to be more 2S people sitting at those tables that are knowledgeable, that can carry a good message, and that can come back to places like our executive director council that have 13 kin organizations collaborating together, working together, and trying to have fairness of just being at those tables that create change. I don't know if that makes sense. No, but
yeah, it makes sense.
Essentially what we want, you know?
Yeah, that is definitely, you're right, very hard to do when there are people, other people at the table that aren't even questioning things like human rights or don't know what that experience is like with the ignorance that you're talking about too. So
I think about it and like, how can you speak about something you've never lived?
Yeah, exactly.
How can you care about something you've never experienced? If you've never experienced racism in your entire life, in your ideology, you think it does not exist. But when you come out of this world, especially the way I look, I look Indigenous. Some people don't know what kind of Indigenous. They think I'm everything. They claim me. They're like, I go on vacation. They're like, you're one of us. And I'm like, probably. We're probably related somewhere. You know, but like, if you're not walking in the world where, I'll use this analogy, and it was given to me at a very young age by my grandfather. He always said, you need to get up early, you need to get there on time. You need to be there early, like 15 minutes early to half an hour early to anything that you have to go to. Okay, why? I was 17, didn't know much about life. And he said, because being Indigenous, you're starting at the bottom of the barrel. They're not going to pick you all the time. Being female identified, they're not going to pick you. You're not going to be a priority. They're not going to be the thing that they want. And being Wingte, you're 3 steps behind already. And all you did was wake up.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're white, cisgendered male, you wake up, you have the opportunity right there. It's right there. All you got to do is extend your hand and take it. But you have all of these other steps just to catch up to that guy. So at least you could do is work hard and show up. That's the bare minimum so that at least you're at the playing field with them. But it's going to take grit to be there. Because they're going to try intimidate you that you don't belong. You said, but you know better. You know who you are. You're Dakota, you're Cree. You know that. You know you're Wingte. You know that. You know you're female identified. You know that. You know that you're Indigenous identified. You know that. You know who you are. You know where you're going. That you have intention and purpose in this world. If you can feel your heartbeat, chante washte. You'd always say that. You can feel that, your heart, chante. And he'd always say, put your hand like this. And he'd tell me, you know, put your right hand in like you're going to pinch something. And you put it towards your heart and you tap on your chest. And you say, you feel that? That's purpose. Anything you do with good heart, good things come out of it. So it's being able to think in that kind of mentality. That's what I've been given. I know not everybody has that. I know that being brought up in traditional, ceremonial customs, protocol, and procedures, it wasn't easy. I didn't have it easy. I was ridiculed in those spaces. But having guidance like that, mentors like that, that fought for me to be there, being like, no, no, they belonged sitting here. You may see a female identified. I see someone that's going to be a leader. They need to understand these roles and responsibilities at these small spaces of ceremony. They deserve to sit here. And he would shoo them away. I had strong mentors like that, that sat in places that people didn't want them. But they did that. Because they would always remind people, hey, we're not in residential school anymore. We don't follow their rules. Because here, we have natural law. And we know when we don't do things right, natural law takes over. There's customs that guide us. And the biggest thing is natural law. And one of them is being kind to our own people. Kindness is very hard to get. Respect is even harder. Got to earn it. So he would teach me these things. I come with that at the table. Not everybody has that, and I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I find when I come to these spaces is that our youth are saying, we don't have culture. We don't have access to culture because there's gatekeepers there that they're saying, no, you can't come the way you are. No, you have to sit there. No, you can't come. Oh, you haven't been sober for 4 days? You need to not come. I grew up with those same protocols. But I also know that you don't go to the hospital well. You know, you come to those things sick. So give me a job that could be meaningful. I wasn't sober ever for a good chunk of my life. And my grandfather would say, go chop wood. Go chop all the wood for the sweat that they're going to have. Go chop all the wood. And you pray about it. Okay. It was a lot of grunt work. I had to learn those things. I earned my space back. I had to earn it back. And it was those places, it was that foundation of those small understandings that gets me to that understanding of like, no, I got to help my people. I got to help all my people. You know?
Yeah.
And I can't, and it's not this euphoric way of like, I'm going to save everybody. I'm not trying to do the savior mentality. People can save themselves. They have the tools and equipment. I just got to be there to help guide them. We all need that.
That concludes the end of part one of this two-part interview with Paulette Petra. Next week at the same time on Thursday, we will continue the discussion and focus on looking 7 generations ahead and the power of traditional Indigenous art. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Pride Programming, and I'll see you next week.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Michael Stein, Private Eye. Of all my sorry tales, the sorriest one is my nemesis bird. That's what us birders call a species that just keeps giving you the slip. Well, my nemesis bird is the painted bunting. A real gem of a bird. The males have blue heads, green wings, and red breasts. And the females are yellow-green. These birds love open spaces, shrubby clearings, and overgrown farm fields. I don't get out of the city much, what with my PI work. But whenever I hear about a painted bunting around, I grab my binoculars and my fedora and rush out the door. And I miss it every time. Last year, I got word of a pair of them in the city cemetery. As the rain began to pour, I jumped in my car and sped across town. I ran to the pond near where the birds had been seen. I asked a nearby birder where they were. She pointed to a tree and said, "Right there. But wait, I can't see them anymore." And then I heard their song, like a dream fading away. So I've heard, but never seen, my nemesis bird. But as I fall asleep, I see those painted buntings and all their fantastic color. Someday, I tell myself, you'll see them someday.
Watched you leave so many times through the rolling hills, prairie skies held your place between the lines where the story's told. The trouble dies with a heart of gold. The winners rise. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Welcome back to CJSF 90.1 FM, a very special on-site gallery opening with my good friend Cleese Hamilton. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I feel quite honored right now that I've got this space right now to show some work, and that my family and friends have showed up to, you know, come and open up the space in a good way.
We've got a lot of different media here, and what are the running dates of this exhibition?
The running dates of this exhibition are September the 1st until the 30th, 2024. We're down at the Britannia Art Gallery, which is located inside of the Britannia Library on Commercial Drive.
Yeah, and we're quite close to the Carving Center as well here, the rink, and it really is kind of a social hub around this area, so it's nice that it is a central and open to the public place. I really appreciate that. Some amazing pieces. I've seen a couple of them before. I do have, or I got a copy of the baby sea otter one. I love that one. And a few pieces of jewelry have made it, blessed our family as well too. Some dentalum and trade beads and copper as well, using those, you know, those materials of ancient times as well as modern times. This is what I've always loved about your work, is that you had a synthesis between stuff that we know works and, hey, why don't we try bringing, you know, some form line, some different styles into the present as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, my name is Cleese Hamilton. I'm Nuchalnas and Stalo. My dad is from Hoopachisset. That's located in what's now known as Port Alberni. It's on the west coast of Vancouver Island. My mother's family is Stalo from Lacamo. Her name is Quetzaltatl, and her mother was from a place called Stalis, which is just down the road. Both of those places are located in what's now known as the Fraser Valley, near Mission, Chilliwack, Abbotsford. That's all of our traditional territory out there. And I have been producing art as a full-time artist since I was about 15 years old. I started, my first medium was glass. I moved forward and started doing metal work, working with steel, copper, silver, platinum, gold, and I've now ventured a little bit further into the 2D realm, and I'm working with spray paint, I'm working with acrylics, oil paints, and I also love doing print work right now, so I'm kind of all over the board. But
yeah, it's good. It's honestly a good reflection of the dedication of an artist to confront various media and incorporate it into their oeuvre. So I love seeing, you know, some of these pieces go back to, I see dates to like 2019 on some of the prints as well. And I know I've got a piece of your glasswork at home, and it's, I know that was kind of where we met originally, yeah. Way back, maybe even like a decade ago, thing. It was an honest, a very, like, you know, great way to see that there was functional as well as more traditional forms as well in that glass medium. And then to see you branch out over the years. I remember seeing some of your first like hand-hammered copper necklaces and bracelets and everything, and now seeing this like beautiful refined style you've got going on, and not just, you know, a general form line, but a specific form line from your nations, from the area as well too, that just that respect that we need to be paying to these forms. For the listeners out there, there's a wide selection of cool stuff here tucked in the corner of the Britannia Library, and one of my favorites is there's a little teacup in a display case, and it has some trade beads, it has some copper in there. I thought that was a great little addition. It's if you're not looking, you might miss it, kind of thing, you know.
The display case that you're talking about, where the teacup is meant to be a glimpse inside of my studio. So everything that you see there, the small maquette of a larger painting, photographs that are framed from this past summer, a couple of personal paintings, some paint brushes, other things that I keep around my studio as a way to inspire myself. They're all, yeah, exactly, meant to be a peek inside of what it's like in my space where I create my work.
Yeah.
And that teacup, that's actually a find from a thrift store.
Yes.
So I love tiny things, and I keep that on my bench where I make all my jewelry all the time. And the pieces that you see inside of it are actually small little pieces of each kind of jewelry that I'm working on right now. So I'll stop in the middle of a piece, and if I, you know, make a piece and it doesn't fit well onto the jewelry, I then put it in that cup, you know, and it's like it kind of just collects all the odds and ends.
It's a capsule of Queese. Yeah. I love it. Tell us a little bit about some of these large format canvases. We're looking at one that has a grid format and then some orange, a splash of orange going across.
So that one there is, it was made from an old sign that I was carrying from October the 8th until around June, I think it was like the 15th or 16th, when it rained this year at one of the pro-Palestinian rallies that happened here in Vancouver. I have been very vocal since my teen years about my solidarity with Palestinian folks and their struggle for freedom and an end to their oppression by the state of Israel, mm-hmm. by the settler state of Israel. Mm-hmm. And the artwork that you see there, the grid form, was created by cutting out the artwork that I put on my sign. So the design there is a human ancestor who's inside of a box.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a representation of the bones that we would put inside of bent wood boxes mm-hmm. prior to colonization. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be a form of strength and remembrance that our family are always with us, our ancestors are always with us, and the piece itself is a way to show solidarity with our Palestinian family. The orange is meant to represent our Every Child Matters movement here mm-hmm. in so-called Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Orange t-shirts and the color orange have been a symbol of our resistance and our remembrance of our children that were taken and are still taken by the Canadian colonial state. And I wanted that Every Child Matters movement and sentiment to extend to our Palestinian family as a way to honor the children that are there right now fighting for their lives under the oppression from the state of Israel.
It's so important for art to be current,
yeah.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the reasons why we really have to support and jump on things like gallery openings and protests and mm-hmm. poetry and book signings and mm-hmm. all of these things that are an expression of the current, of the now, because mm-hmm. if we don't have a record of the now, mm-hmm. we don't know how to move forward in a better way.
Oh, exactly.
One piece that's on the wall here that a lot of people have pointed to are those four wolves that are around, and I yeah. kind of overheard you mentioning that it is an exclusive piece in a special way.
Yeah, so that piece there's four wolves in a crouched position that are surrounding a giant black circle in the center of the piece. That black circle is meant to represent the entrance and the exit to the spirit world. So those four wolves represent our ancestors, they represent our future generations, and they're also a reminder of how powerful our connection is with the future and the past. We have the spirits of all of our ancestors surrounding us and within us at all times, and it's also a reminder of how thin the veil is, of how close we are to the beginning of our life and the end of our life throughout our entire experience as humans. And there are three stars over the top three wolves,
mm-hmm.
and those are a reminder of where we come from,
mm.
that we're all stardust and that we all are here by chance. We're here by fortune, and it's an incredible opportunity to be alive. So, that piece is meant for family and very close friends. Currently, there are two prints of it, one that's here on display at the gallery, and one is in the collection of a friend of mine who moved away. And her last name is Wolf, and I became very close with her over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So the piece kind of made sense to give to her. And that one is mostly going to be given away. I don't know if I'll ever sell one of those prints.
I think it's a good idea for artists to have some reserved collections, you know, a couple of things in the cellar, right?
Definitely.
It's fantastic to see you as a friend. It's been a hot minute since I've seen you, but even more to see you now as a mature artist.
Mm.
Many different media, many different forms. One quick question before I go. Mm-hmm. Are there any media or forums or people you haven't worked with yet that you'd like to?
I'm in the very beginning stages of learning how to design and build canoes.
Oh,
so that is something that I've been wanting to do since I was a child. It's always been a dream of my mother, Quetzaltattles, to create a canoe. And so I want to be a part of that dream. And I also partake in canoeing quite a bit, traditional Coast Salish war canoe racing. And so I want to kind of carry that into the future. I want to be a part of like the canoe culture. So that right now is like my biggest aspiration and the medium I'm moving towards currently.
Fantastic. Well, keep us updated. Mm-hmm. And where can people find your information online?
I think the best place to find me is probably on Instagram. My Instagram is quis.hamilton. That's quis.hamilton. Yeah, Quis Hamilton on Instagram. You can also find me at my email, which is just the same at gmail.com. It's quishamilton@gmail.com.
Amazing. Many of these artworks are for sale, so if you want to come down and, you know, support local indigenous art as well as see someone who has evolved over time and is now just taking the local scene by storm, I would highly encourage you to come down to the Britannia Public Library. As you come in through the door, just turn off to your left and we've got Quis's exhibition here for the rest of the month.
Cheers.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So good to see you.
Yeah, so good to see you too, Matt. I appreciate the time.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Mosquitoes are not just a nuisance. They can also be a public health risk, and many areas are now seeing more of them, and even species they haven't seen before, like Aedes albopictus, which can spread diseases like dengue, chikungunya, and lacrosse virus. Davidson Hamer is a public health researcher at Boston University.
Aedes albopictus has spread from the southern part of the U.S. gradually all the way up into New England and even into Ontario.
A warming climate could allow these and some other disease-carrying species to spread even farther. And as climate change brings longer summers and more rain, mosquitoes could also have more of the warm, wet habitats they love to breed in. Hamer says people can protect themselves by using bug spray, installing window screens, and eliminating standing water near their homes.
Discarded tires or even potted plants, anywhere where there's a little sort of residual stand of water that could potentially serve as a breeding site.
He also says public health officials should monitor these mosquito populations and the diseases they can carry, so communities can prepare for emerging health risks in a changing climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Hey, my name's Katie. You want some cool new music to listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.
Join SFU SOCA, the Students of Caribbean and African Ancestry, on Friday, September 27th from 6 to 10 p.m. in the Student Union Building, room 1430, to celebrate the start of a new semester. Music, food, games, and pure vibes will be on hand as SOCA welcomes students back to campus. For more information, check out the SFU Soca Instagram page at SFU Soca.